Ha! Don't say that, though. She'll be forced to think of something worse. Too late. I'll throw flowers on your grave. Gee, thanks. I tuck the phone away when the teacher glances in my direction. Once the fancy chimes ring to let us know class is over, I shove everything into my pack and hoof it outside, hoping that Durand is waiting and I can escape to the princess bedroom. The pink and white is growing on me. The parking lot is filled with noise, people, and expensive cars, but no Durand. Harper. Valerie appears over my right shoulder. Your ride isn't here? No, I don't see him. She clicks her tongue sympathetically. I'd offer you a ride, but I don't think you want to get in the same car as Jordan. You'd be right about that. You should go, though. Once school is out, it can get rough. Out here in broad daylight? That's alarming. Valerie's forehead wrinkles with concern. Jordan has moments of cunning. Don't underestimate her. I tighten my grip on the backpack and give myself an internal slap for carrying around so much cash. There has to be a place in the royal pile of bricks where I can hide this. Why does she get away with it? Savannah Montgomery told me that everyone here is special. So why is Jordan the leader if everyone has something unique to offer? Connections, Valerie replies bluntly. The Carringtons aren't part of the 10-figure club like the royals, but they know everyone. They've done business with celebs, royalty. Jordan's aunt on her dad's side is married to some Italian count. We actually have to refer to her as Lady Perino if she shows up for Christmas. That's unreal. So Jordan is, by extension. She breaks off. Hold on, here she comes. I brace myself as Jordan strolls toward us. Like all alphas, she has a pack trailing behind her. They look like a toothpaste commercial, acres of white shining teeth, and long straight hair swishing behind them. If it makes you feel any better, Jordan's hair has a lot of wave to it, and she has to spend an hour flat ironing it every morning. Valerie mutters under her breath. Doesn't Valerie have any decent shit on Jordan? Because she spends too much time on her hair really isn't a great put down. I'm feeling really superior now, I say dryly. Valerie gives me a quirky smile and slides her hand around my arm in moral support. Jordan halts about 2 feet from me and makes a couple of obvious sniffs with her nose. You smell, she informs me. And it's not from the trash in your locker. It's just you. Thanks for the heads up. I guess I'll start showering twice a day instead of just once, I say sweetly. But inside, I'm worried, because what if I really do smell? That would be about just as bad as toting around a used maxi pad on my shoe. She sighs and flips her hair over one shoulder. It's the type of smell no amount of showering will ever wash away. You see, you're a casual. I look at Valerie with a question. She rolls her eyes in response. Okay, then, I reply cheerfully. Good to know. Jordan wants me to look stupid, so the best I can do is not get drawn into her game. But my non-reaction doesn't turn her away. She just keeps shooting her mouth, probably because she likes hearing herself talk. Casuals will always reek of desperation. Well, she's got me there. That's pretty much the perfume of a strip club. I force myself to shrug. I don't know what casual means in bitch, but I'm assuming it's bad. What I don't get is why you think I give a rat's ass about your opinion of me. The world is really big, Jordan. You throwing trash in my locker or calling me names isn't going to matter in 2 years. Hell, it hardly matters today. Her mouth drops open and Valerie turns her face into my arm to smother a laugh. I don't know what Jordan's comeback would have been because there's a commotion behind me. People move. And I know who's standing behind me before Jordan's perfect red lips form his name. Reed, she breathes. I didn't see you there. There's an uncertainty in her voice that surprises me. I wonder what the exact text of Reed's anti-Ella decree is, and I make a mental note to ask Valerie.
You done?
He asks. and I'm not sure if he's talking to me or Jordan. By the way her eyes flick from me to some place about a foot above my head, she's not sure either. I was wondering if you wanted to go over our AP English assignment, she says finally.
Finished it,
he replies tersely. Jordan rubs her lips together. That's a slap at her, and we all know it. I almost feel sorry for her. Almost. Hey, Reed. A different, softer voice chimes in. It comes from a delicate-looking girl, whose golden blonde hair is caught up in braids that wrap around her head like a crown. Her cornflower blue eyes are covered in ridiculously long lashes, which wave like feathers as she waits for Reed's response.
Abby, he says, his entire face softening. Nice to see you.
Half the chicks in this school claim to have slept with him, but who knows if that's true. Only one I know about for sure is Jordan's friend, Abby. So this is the girl who caught Reed, at least once. I can see why. She's gorgeous. So is Jordan, but Abby is soft in a way that Jordan and me are not. This is what Reed likes. Soft girls who talk to their feet. No wonder he isn't interested in... Wait, what am I even thinking? I don't care if Reed is interested in me. He's welcome to all the pale, starry-eyed girls like Abby he wants.
I've missed you, she says.
And the longing in her voice makes us all shift uncomfortably.
It's been a busy summer,
Reed replies, shoving both hands in his pockets. He's not meeting Abby's eyes, and his tone has an air of finality to it. She hears it, too, and her eyes glisten. It might be over for Reed, but it's painfully obvious that Abby hasn't moved on. I kind of feel sorry for her. When Reed lays his heavy hand on my shoulder, I almost jump out of my skin, and I don't miss the spiteful glares from the toothpaste girls or the wounded dove expression on Abby's face. If Reed Royal touches anyone, it's not supposed to be me.
You ready, Ella?
He mutters. I guess. This whole confrontation makes my shoulders itch, so I don't argue when Reed steers me toward Easton's truck. When we reach it, I jerk out of Reed's grip. Where's Easton?
He's driving the twins.
Did you just use me to get away from your ex? I ask as he opens the door and pushes me inside.
She's not my ex.
He slams the door. As Reed rounds the front of the truck, I see Valerie waving to me with a huge-ass grin on her face. Behind her, Jordan is glowering. Abby looks like a kicked puppy.
Buckle up,
Reed orders as he starts the truck. I do what he says because it's safe, not because he told me to. Where's Durand? I wave back to Valerie, who gives me the thumbs up. I hope Jordan didn't see that, or Valerie may find herself moving from her proper bedroom to some closet in the basement. And why are you driving me?
I wanted to talk to you.
He pauses for a beat.
Are you trying to embarrass the family?
Shocked, I turn in my seat to look at him. And try not to notice how sexy his strong forearms look as he grips the steering wheel in frustration. Do you think I threw garbage in my own locker? I ask incredulously.
I'm not talking about that juvenile bullshit Jordan is pulling. I mean your job at the bakery.
First, how do you know about that, Mr. Stalker? And second, how is that even remotely embarrassing?
First, I have football practice in the mornings. I saw Durand drop you off there.
He bites out.
And second, it implies that we aren't taking care of you. At lunch, someone asked if Callum bought the bakery, and that's why the new Royal is working there.
I fall back against the seat and cross my arms. Well, golly gee, I'm so sorry that you had to answer an awkward question at lunch. That must have been so inconvenient. Much more inconvenient than getting hit in the face with a tampon flying out of your locker. When he grins, I totally lose it. All the frustration and hurt comes rolling out of me. I'm tired of playing the good, calm girl. I rise up on my knees, reach over, and hit him across the top of his head.
Fuck! He curses. What the hell was that for?
That's for being an asshole. I hit him again, thumb tucked away and knuckles out, just like my mom's old boyfriend taught me. Reed pushes me back hard against the passenger door.
Sit the fuck down, you're gonna make us crash.
I'm not gonna sit down.
I swing at him again.
I'm tired of you and your insults and your awful friends.
Maybe if you're straight with me, then I'll call off the dogs. What's your game?
He glowers at me, one long arm still pushing me away from him. I try to fight my way to him, flinging my arms but catching nothing but air. You want to know what my game is? My game is to get a diploma and go to college. That's my game.
Why'd you come here? I know you took money from my dad.
I never asked for your father to bring me here.
You didn't fight it very hard, he snaps. If you even fought at all.
The accusation stings, partly because it's true, but also because it's unfair. Yeah, I didn't fight it, because I'm not an idiot. Your father offered me a future, and I'd be the stupidest person on the planet not to take him up on that. If that makes me a money grubber or a gold digger, then fine. I guess I am. But at least I'm not the type of person who makes someone walk 2 miles in the dark in a strange place. I watch with satisfaction, as a flicker of remorse flashes through his eyes.
So you admit you have no shame, he spits out.
Yes, I don't have any problem admitting I have no shame, I shoot back. Shame and principles are for people who don't have to worry about the little things, like how much can I buy for a dollar to feed myself all day, or do I pay my mom's medical bills, or buy some weed so she can go for an hour without pain. Shame is a luxury. I fall back, exhausted. I stop trying to fight him. It's impossible anyway. He's too strong. Damn it. You haven't cornered the market on grief. You're not the only one who lost his mother. Oh, poor Reed Royal, I mock. He's turned into an asshole because he lost his mommy.
Shut up.
No, you shut up. Before the words even come out of my mouth, I realize how ridiculous we're being and start laughing. A minute ago, we were yelling at each other like 5-year-olds. I laugh so hard, I start crying, or maybe I was crying all along and it just sounded like laughter. I bend over and put my head between my legs because I don't want Reed to see he's broken me.
Stop crying, he mutters.
Stop telling me what to do, I sob. He finally shuts up, and I manage to get myself back in control by the time we drive past the gate and into the side driveway. Did I really say I had no shame? That's not at all true. And I'm mortified that I cried for 5 minutes in front of Reed Royal.
You done?
He asks, after he brakes and cuts the engine. Screw you, I say tiredly.
I want you to stop working at the bakery.
I want Jordan to grow a heart overnight, but we don't always get what we want, do we? He makes a frustrated noise.
Callum won't like it.
Oh my God! You're constantly changing the rules. Stay away from me, Ella. Get in the car, Ella. Don't bleed my father dry, Ella. Don't get a job, Ella. I don't know what you want from me.
That makes two of us, he says darkly.
I don't even want to touch that. So I open the truck door and stumble out. The devil inside of me stirs, I guess so I can save a little face, and I turn abruptly. Owen Reed, don't use me as a cover because you don't want to face up to an ex.
She's not an ex,
he roars after me. I shouldn't find those words so satisfying, but I do. Chapter 13. The second I get inside, I hurry upstairs and lock myself in my bedroom. I dump my schoolbooks on the bed and grab the first assignment I see, but it's hard to concentrate on my homework when I'm still so angry and embarrassed about what just happened between Reed and me. The rational part of my brain understands where my outburst came from. Less than a week ago, my entire life was uprooted. Callum wrenched me out of Kirkwood and brought me to this strange town and his fancy house to face off with his asshole sons. The Royal brothers have done nothing but antagonize me since I got here. Their friends shamed me at that stupid party and humiliated me at school today. And through it all, Reed Royal is sprouting his golden rules and then changing them every other second. What normal 17-year-old girl wouldn't lose her shit? But that other part of me, the one that tries to protect me at all costs by shielding my emotions,
That part yells at me for allowing myself to cry in front of Reed, for letting him see just how uncertain and vulnerable I feel in this new world I've been thrust into. I hate myself for being weak. Somehow I managed to finish my assignments, but now it's 6 o'clock, and my stomach is grumbling. God, I don't want to go downstairs. I wish I could just order room service. Why doesn't this place have room service? It's pretty much a hotel already. Stop hiding from him. Don't give him the satisfaction. If I skip dinner, Reed will know he won, and I can't let him win. I won't let him break me. Still, even after I decide to face the jerk, I continue to stall. I take a long shower and wash my hair, then change into a pair of tiny black boxers and a loose red tank top. Then I brush my wet hair. Then I check my phone to see if Valerie texted. Then, okay, enough procrastinating. My empty stomach agrees, rumbling the entire way down the spiral staircase. In the kitchen, I find one of the twins at the stove, stirring a spatula in what looks like a wad of noodles. The other twin is poking his head in the fridge, griping to his brother.
What the hell, man? I thought Sandra was back from vacation.
Tomorrow, the other twin answers.
Thank fuck. Since when do housekeepers go on vacay? I'm tired of cooking our own meals. We should have gone out for dinner with Dad and Reed.
My forehead wrinkles as I absorb the information. One, these boys are so spoiled, they can't even cook their own meals. And two, Reed went out for dinner with Callum? Did Callum hold a gun to his head? The twin at the stove notices me lurking in the doorway and frowns.
What are you looking at?
I shrug. Just watching you burn your dinner. His head whirls to the pan, and he groans when he notices the smoke rising from it.
God damn it! Seb, grab an oven mitt!
Geez, these boys really are useless. What the heck does he plan on doing with the oven mitt? The question answers itself when Sawyer slips on the mitt his brother tosses him and lifts the pan by its handle, which, unless it's a defective pan, wouldn't have a hot handle. I get a kick out of watching the boys try to salvage their dinner, and I can't fight a snicker when hot oil splashes out of the pan and burns Sawyer's non-oven mitt-covered wrist. He howls in pain as his brother shuts off the burner. Then they both stare at the burnt chicken and noodles in dismay.
Cereal?
Sebastian says. Sawyer sighs. Even with the terrible burning smell in the air, my stomach is still growling. So I saunter over to the wall of cupboards and start grabbing ingredients, while the twins watch me warily. I'm making spaghetti, I tell them without turning around. Do you want any? There's a long silence before one of them mumbles.
Yes.
The other follows suit. I cook in silence while they sit at the table like the lazy, entitled royals that they are, neither one offering to help me. 20 minutes later, the three of us are eating our dinner. Not a single word passes between us. Easton walks in at the tail end of the meal, his eyes narrowing when he spots me shoving my plate in the dishwasher. Then he looks at the table, where his brothers are on their second helping of spaghetti.
Sandra back from vacation?
Sebastian shakes his head and shovels more pasta into his mouth. His twin jerks his head toward me.
She cooked.
She has a name, I say curtly. And you're welcome for dinner, ungrateful jerks. I mutter that last part under my breath as I stalk out of the kitchen. Instead of going back to my room, I find myself wandering into the library. Callum showed it to me the other day, and I'm still in awe of the sheer amount of books in the room. The built-in bookshelves go all the way up to the ceiling, and there's an old-timey ladder you can use to reach the top shelves. On the other side of the room is a cozy sitting area, with two overstuffed chairs, positioned in front of a modern fireplace. I don't feel like reading, but I flop down in one of the chairs anyway, breathing in the scent of leather and old books. As my gaze moves to the fireplace mantle, my heart speeds up. Photographs line the stone ledge, and one in particular snags my attention. It's a shot of a young-looking Callum, in a navy uniform, with his arm slung over the shoulder of a tall, blonde man, also in uniform. I think it's Steve O'Halloran, My father. I stare at the man's chiseled face, the blue eyes that seem to twinkle with mischief as they meet the camera lens. I have his eyes, and my hair is the same shade of blonde. When footsteps echo behind me, I turn to see Easton stride into the library.
I heard you tried to kill my brother today, he drawls.
He had it coming. I turn my back to him again, but he comes up beside me, and from the corner of my eye, I see that his profile is harder than stone.
Let's be straight with each other. Did you really think you'd show up here on our father's arm and we'd all be cool with it?
I'm not on your father's arm. I'm his ward.
Yeah? Look me in the eye and tell me you're not fucking my dad.
For God's sake. Gritting my teeth, I meet his surly gaze head on and say, I'm not fucking your dad, and ew for even suggesting it. He shrugs.
It's not a stretch. He likes him young.
That's obviously a reference toward Brooke, but I don't comment on it. My gaze travels back to the picture on the mantle. Easton and I go silent for so long, I wonder why he's even still here.
Uncle Steve was a baller, he finally says. Chicks dropped their panties when that dude walked into a room.
Double ew. That is not something I ever wanted to know about my father.
What was he like? I ask reluctantly. He was all right, I guess. We didn't spend much time with him. He was always holed up in my dad's study. The two of them would sit there talking for hours.
Easton sounds bitter. Aw, your daddy liked my daddy better than you. Is that why you hate me so much? He rolls his eyes.
Do yourself a favor and stop provoking my brother. If you keep getting in his face, you're just gonna get hurt.
Why bother with the warning? Isn't that what you want, for me to get hurt? He doesn't answer. He just steps away from the mantle and leaves me in the library, where I continue to stare at my father's picture. I wake up at midnight to the sound of hushed voices in the hallway outside my bedroom door. I'm groggy as hell, but alert enough to recognize Reed's voice, and even though I'm lying down, my knees actually feel weak. I haven't seen him since our fight in the car earlier. When he got back from dinner with Callum, I was already locked up in my room again, but judging by the angry footsteps and slamming door, I'm pretty sure dinner didn't go so well. I don't know why I slide out of bed, or why I tiptoe toward my door. Eavesdropping isn't really my style, but I want to know what he's saying, and who he's saying it to. I want to know if it's about me, and maybe that's really conceited, but I still need to know.
Practice in the morning.
It's Easton talking now, and I press my ear to the door to try to hear more clearly.
Agreed to cut down during the season.
Reed mutters something I can't make out.
I get it, okay? I'm not crazy about her being here either, but that's no reason to...
Easton's sentence cuts out.
It's not about her.
I hear that loud and clear, and I don't know whether I'm relieved or disappointed that whatever they're discussing doesn't involve me.
Then I'm coming with you.
No,
Reed says sharply.
Going alone tonight.
He's going somewhere? Where the hell is he going this late and on a school night? Worry tugs at my gut, which almost makes me laugh because all of a sudden I'm worrying about Reed Royal, the guy I attacked in the car earlier.
Now you sound like Gid,
Reed accuses.
Yeah, well, maybe you...
Their voices go hushed again. Which is so freaking frustrating, because I know I'm missing something important. I'm tempted to fling open the door and stop Reed from doing whatever he's about to do, but it's too late. Two sets of footsteps echo in the hall, and a door clicks shut. Then it's just one set of footsteps, barely audible, as they descend the stairs. A few minutes later, a car engine rumbles from the courtyard, and I know Reed is gone. Chapter 14. The next morning, I find Reed in the driveway, leaning against Easton's truck. He's dressed in sneakers, long gym shorts, and a muscle tee that is open at the sides, and looking hotter than any jerk has the right to. A baseball cap is pulled low over his forehead. I look around, but the black town car is nowhere in sight. Where's Durand?
You planning on going to the bakery?
You planning on burning it down so I don't tarnish the royal name by working there? He grumbles in annoyance. I grumble back.
Well,
he mutters. I scowl at him. Yes, I'm going to work.
I've got football practice, so if you want to ride, I suggest getting in the car, because otherwise, you're gonna be walking.
He opens the passenger door and then stomps to the driver's side. I look for Durand again. Damn it, where is he? When Reed guns the engine, I start moving. What harm can he really do in a 20-minute ride?
Buckle up,
he snaps. I just got in, give me a minute. I cast my eyes upward and say a tiny prayer for patience. Reed doesn't take off until I'm all buckled in. Do you have male PMS, or are you just in a shitty mood 24/7? He doesn't answer. I hate myself for it, but I can't stop looking at him. Can't stop sweeping my eyes over the side of his movie star face, his perfect ear that is framed by his dark hair. All the royals have varying shades of brown hair. Reed's runs closer to chestnut. In profile, his nose has a tiny bump on it, and I wonder which of his brothers broke it for him. It's really not fair how hot this guy is, and he's got this whole bad boy vibe that I'm not usually into, but for some reason, it makes him even hotter. I guess I like bad boys. Wait, what the hell am I thinking? I don't like bad boys, and I don't like Reed. He's the biggest asshole I've ever...
Why are you staring at me?
He asks in annoyance. I push away all my crazy thoughts and counter. Why not?
Like the way I look, do you?
He taunts. Nope. Just committing to memory the profile of a jackass. You know, so if I'm ever called upon to draw one in art, I'll have some inspiration. I reply airily. He grunts, and it sounds suspiciously like a laugh. For the first time in his presence, I start to relax. The rest of the trip passes quickly, almost too quickly. I feel a tiny kernel of disappointment when the bakery comes into view, which is all sorts of fucked up because I don't like this guy. You driving me every day or just this morning? I ask when he breaks in front of the French twist.
Depends. How long you planning on keeping up the charade?
It's not a charade, it's called earning a living. I get out of the truck before he can manage another stupid and mean retort.
Hey,
he calls after me. What? I turn around, and that's when I get my first full look at his face this morning. My hand flies up to cover my mouth. The left side of his face, a part that I now realize he kept shaded from me the entire ride, is bruised. His lip is puffy. There's a gash over his eye, and a bruise on the upper edge of his cheek. Oh my God, what happened to you? I raise my fingers to his face, not realizing that my feet carried me from the bakery back to the truck. He jerks away from my touch.
Nothing.
My hand falls uselessly to my side. It doesn't look like nothing.
It is to you.
Grim-faced, he speeds off, leaving me behind to wonder what he did last night and why he called me over just now if he wasn't planning on saying anything important. I do know one thing. If I got hit that hard in the face, I'd be pissy the next morning, too. Despite my better judgment, I worry about Reed throughout my morning shift at the bakery. Lucy casts me some concerned looks, but since I work hard like I promised, she doesn't say anything. After my shift, I hurry off to school, but I don't see Reed. Not on the path leading to the gym, not in the halls, and not even at lunch. It's like he doesn't even go to Astor Park. And when classes are over, it's the big town car that's waiting for me. Durand's holding the door impatiently, so I can't even loiter in the parking lot. It's better this way, I tell myself. No good can come from thinking about Reed Royal. I lecture myself all the way home, but as we pull through the wrought iron gates, Durand gives me something else to think about.
Mr. Royal would like to see you.
His double bass voice informs me when the car comes to a stop at the front steps. I sit there like a dummy as I process that Mr. Royal means Callum. Okay.
He's in the pool house.
The pool house, I repeat.
Am I being called to the principal's office, Durand?
His eyes meet mine in the rearview mirror.
Don't think so, Ella.
That's not very encouraging.
Want me to drive you around some more?
Will he still want to see me?
Durand nods.
Then I better go. I sigh dramatically.
The corner of his eyes lift slightly in what is considered a broad smile for him. I drop my backpack at the base of the sweeping staircase and then make the trek to the back of the house, across the long patio, and to the end of the yard. The pool house is glassed in on three sides. There must be some trick to the walls, because sometimes the side nearest the pool is reflective rather than see-through. As I get closer, I realize that the walls are really a series of doors on a slider, and they've been opened, allowing the ocean breeze to drift from the shore up to the house. Callum is sitting on a sofa facing the ocean. He turns around when my shoes scrape on the tiled floor. He nods in greeting.
Ella, you have a good day at school?
No trash in my locker, no pranks in the girls' room. Could have been worse, I reply. He gestures for me to come sit with him.
This was Maria's favorite place, he tells me.
When all the doors are open, you can hear the ocean.
She liked getting up early to watch the sunrise. She told me once it was like a magic show every morning. The sun draws back the curtain of inky black to reveal a palette of colors more gorgeous than even the greatest masters could conjure.
Are you sure she wasn't a poet? He smiles.
She was rather poetic.
She also said the rhythmic push and pull of the waves against the shore is a musical score as pure as the most brilliant orchestration.
We listen to it, the tinkle and wash as the tides creep up to the sand, and then slide back as if pulled by an invisible hand.
It's beautiful, I admit.
A low moan slips from Callum's throat. In one hand, he clutches his usual glass of whiskey, but in the other, gripped so tight his knuckles are white, he holds a picture of a dark-haired woman with eyes so bright it's like the sun shining from the frame. Is that Maria? I gesture to the frame. He swallows and nods.
Beautiful, isn't she?
I nod back. Callum tips his head and empties the glass in one swift gulp. He barely sets the glass down before reaching for a refill.
Maria was the glue that held our family together. Atlantic Aviation hit a bad patch about 10 years ago. A series of reckless decisions coupled with the recession placed my son's legacy in jeopardy, and I threw myself into saving it, which took me away from the family. I missed seeing Maria. She always wanted a daughter, you know?
I can only nod again. It's kind of hard to follow along this weird, disjointed speech. I have no idea where he's going with all of this.
She would have loved you. She would have taken you from Steve and raised you as her own. She wanted a girl so badly.
I sit still as a stone. None of this sad story can be leading anywhere good.
My sons blame me for her death,
he says, suddenly, startling me with the unexpected confession.
They're right to do so, which is why I let them get away with all kinds of shit. Oh, I know about their little rebellions, but I can't bring myself to raise a harsh word. I'm trying to pull the threads together now, but I'll be the first to admit that I'm a mess. And I've made a mess of this family.
He draws a shaky hand through his hair, still managing to hold his glass. Almost like the crystal object is the only thing keeping him tethered to this earth. I'm sorry, is all I can think to say.
You're probably wondering why I'm telling you this.
A little. He gives me a crooked, rough smile that reminds me so much of Reed that my insides flip over.
Dinah wants to meet you.
Who's Dinah?
Steve's widow.
My pulse speeds up. Oh.
I've been putting her off because you just got here and, well, I wanted you to come to me about Steve. She and Steve toward the end there.
He trails off.
It wasn't good.
My guard snaps up. I get the feeling that I'm not going to like whatever you're about to say,
You're pretty perceptive. He hastily finishes off his second glass. She's demanding you come alone.
So I'm supposed to meet my dead dad's wife, who Callum dislikes so much that he's mainlining whiskey, without anyone at my back? I sigh. When I said my day could be worse, it wasn't meant as a challenge. He snorts at this.
Dinah reminded me that my connection to you is more tenuous than hers. She's your father's widow. I'm just his friend and business partner.
A chill skates across my skin. Are you saying that your guardianship isn't legit?
It's temporary, until Steve's will has been probated, he admits. Dinah could contest it.
I can't sit. I jump up and walk to the edge of the room, staring out at the water. I suddenly feel so stupid. I let myself believe I could make a home here, even though Reed hates me, even though the students at Astor Park delight in tormenting me. Those things are supposed to be temporary nuisances. Callum has promised me a future, dammit, and now he's telling me this Dinah woman can take that future away?
If I don't go, I say slowly, then she'll start making trouble, won't she?
That's a fair assessment.
Mind made up. I turn back to Callum.
Then what are we waiting for?
Durand takes us into the city and stops in front of a high-rise.
Callum tells me he's going to wait for me in the car, which only makes me more nervous.
This sucks, I say flatly.
He reaches out to touch my arm.
You don't have to go.
What other choice do I have? I can either go up and keep living with the royals, or stay in the car and get taken away? That's messed up.
Ella, he calls as I step onto the curb.
What?
Steve wanted you. When he found out he had a daughter, it tore him up. I swear to you, he would have loved you. Remember that. No matter what Dinah says.
With those not-so-encouraging words in my ear, I let Durand escort me inside. The lobby of Dinah's building is gorgeous, but the effect of the pretty stone walls, crystal lights, and deep wood trim doesn't stun me like it would have, pre-royals.
She's here to see Dinah O'Halloran,
Durand tells the desk clerk.
You can go right up.
Durand gives me a little push.
Last elevator, press P for penthouse.
The carpeted, wood-paneled elevator is almost completely silent. There's no music, only a slight mechanical whir to accompany its movement upward.
It stops way too soon.
The elevator doors slide open, and I step into a wide, short hallway. At the end is one set of double doors. Holy shit, does she live on the entire floor? A woman dressed in a maid's outfit opens one of the doors as I get close.
Mrs. O'Halloran is waiting for you in the sitting room. May I get you a beverage?
Water, I croak. I'd like a water, please. My sneakers sink into the heavy carpet as I follow the maid down the hall and into the sitting room. I feel like a little lamb walking to her slaughter. Dinah O'Halloran is seated beneath a large painting of a nude woman. The model's golden hair is down and she's looking over her shoulder, green eyes narrowed seductively at the viewer. Oh my God.
The woman's face? Is Dinah's.
Do you like it? Dinah asks with raised eyebrows. I have others in the house, but this is the most conservative.
Conservative? Lady, I can see your ass crack in the picture.
It's nice, I lie. Who has a bunch of nude paintings of themselves hanging around their house? I start to lower myself into the other chair in the room, but Dinah's sharp voice stops me.
Did I tell you to sit down?
Cheeks flaming, I stiffen. No. I'm sorry. I remain standing. Her eyes rake over me.
So, you're the girl who Callum says is Steve's daughter. Have you taken a paternity test yet?
A paternity test? No.
She laughs. A hollow, awful sound.
Then how do we know you're not Callum's bastard that he's trying to pass off as Steve's? That would be convenient for him. He always claimed he was faithful to his little wife,
but you would be direct evidence that he wasn't.
Callum's daughter? Brooke had implied the same thing, but Callum looked offended when she'd said it. And my mother said that my dad was a man named Steve. I have his watch. Still, I feel sick to my stomach, even as I straighten my shoulders with false confidence. I'm not Callum's daughter.
Oh, and you know that how?
Because Callum's not the type of man to ignore that he is a kid.
You've been with the royals for all of a week, and you think you know them?
She sneers, then leans forward, hands pressed into the arms of her chair. Steve and Callum were old SEAL buddies. They shared more women than a kindergarten class shares toys. I stare in open-mouthed shock.
I have no doubt that your whore mother screwed them both, she adds.
The slur against Mom wrenches me out of a stunned stupor. Don't talk about my mother. You know nothing about her.
I know enough.
Dinah leans back. She was dirt poor and tried to shake Steve down for money by attempting to blackmail him. When that didn't work, she pretended she had his kid, only what she didn't know is that Steve was sterile. Dinah's accusations are starting to sound like she's flinging a bunch of wet spaghetti at the wall and hoping something sticks, kind of like Jordan and her tampons. I'm getting kind of sick of this crap. Then let's order up the paternity test. I don't have anything to lose. If I'm a royal, then I'll be able to claim a sixth of the royal fortune. Seems like a better deal than just being the ward of Callum Royal. My bravado doesn't go over well with Dinah because she redoubles her attack.
You think Callum Royal cares about you?
That man couldn't keep his wife alive. She killed herself rather than be with him. That's the kind of person you're cozying up to. And his boys, they're drunk with money and privilege, and he lets them run wild. I hope you lock your door at night. Unwittingly, my mind jumps to that first morning when Easton stuck his hand down his pants and casually threatened me. I grit my teeth. Why did you ask me to come here? I'm still not seeing the point of this visit. It seems like she's only interested in taunting me and making me uncomfortable. Dinah offers a cool smile. I just wanted to see what I'm dealing with. One eyebrow flicks up, and I must say, I'm not too impressed. That makes two of us. Here's my advice, she continues.
Take whatever Callum has given you and leave. That house is cancer for women, and someday soon it'll be nothing but dust. I suggest you get out while you still can.
She reaches over and grabs a bell. After one brisk ring, the maid appears like an obedient dog. She holds a tray with a single glass of water on it.
Ms. Harper is ready to leave, Dinah announces. She doesn't need the water.
I can't get out of there fast enough. Callum is waiting in the lobby when I stumble out of the elevator.
Are you okay?
He asks immediately. I rub my hands over my arms. I can't remember the last time I felt this cold.
Is Steve really my dad? I blurt out.
Tell me. He doesn't look at all shocked by the question.
Yes, of course,
he says quietly. Callum leans in, arms open as if he wants to embrace me, but I rock backward, still completely shaken by Dinah's revelations. I don't need his comfort right now. I need the truth.
Why should I believe you?
I think of Dinah's cynical words.
You never gave me proof of paternity.
You want proof? Fine, I'll give you proof.
He looks tired.
The DNA results are locked in my safe at home. And Dinah, by the way, has already seen them. Her lawyers have a copy.
I'm shocked. Did she lie to me, or is he the liar in the bunch?
You did a DNA test?
I wouldn't have brought you here unless I knew for sure. I took a piece of hair from Steve's bathroom at the office, and my PI got a sample of yours to compare it to.
How did... Forget it. I don't even want to know how he got his hands on my DNA. I want to see the test results, I demand.
Suit yourself, but believe me when I say that you're Steve's daughter. I knew you were his the moment I saw you. You have his stubborn jaw, his eyes. I could have picked you out of any lineup as Steve O'Halloran's child. Dinah's angry and scared. Don't let her get to you. Don't let her get to me. The woman just dropped enough bombshells and made enough insinuations to make my head spin. I can't deal with this right now, any of it. I'm ready to go, I say numbly. In the car, I can't bring myself to meet Callum's concerned eyes. Dinah's words play themselves over and over in my mind.
Ella, when I lost my wife, I went through a dark time.
It's a bare acknowledgement of what he thinks Dinah told me. I answer without looking at him. That dark time? I think you're still there.
He pours himself another glass.
Maybe I am.
The rest of the ride is full of silence. Chapter 15. My meeting with Dinah stays with me for 3 days, running through my mind like it's on some sick loop. Lucy probably thinks she hired a robot for all the emotion that I display. I'm afraid if I move my face, though, I'll start crying. But she keeps me on because I show up every morning and the assigned evenings on time and work without complaint. It's a relief to work. When it's busy, I manage to forget how screwed up my life has become. And that's saying something, considering I fled Seattle to avoid social services trying to push me into foster care, and then spent a week on the road before settling in Kirkwood. I thought forging my dead mother's signature on school forms was nuts, but that was nothing compared to the royals and their entourages. It's harder to avoid the topic at school, because Val keeps asking me what's wrong. As much as I adore Val, I don't think she's ready to hear all this crap, and even if she is, I'm not ready to share it. It doesn't matter that Callum showed me the DNA results when we got home that night. The doubt kept eating at me for 3 whole days, until this morning, when I dragged myself out of bed after another sleepless night, and forced myself to remember one undeniable fact. My mother was not a liar. I can count everything Mom told me about my father on one hand. His name was Steve. He was blonde. He was a sailor. He gave her his watch. All of that lines up with everything Callum told me, and when you add in the very obvious resemblance I have to the man in the picture in the library, I have to believe that Dinah O'Halloran, simply put, is full of shit.
You banging someone?
Reed's gruff demand jolts me from my thoughts. I'm in the passenger seat of his Range Rover, trying to stop yawning.
What? Why would you ask me that?
You've got dark circles under your eyes. You've been walking around the house like a zombie since Tuesday, and it looks like you haven't slept in days. So, are you banging someone? Sneaking out to see him?
His jaw is tight.
No. No, he echoes.
Yes, Reed, no. I'm not dating anyone, okay? And even if I was, it's none of your business.
Everything you do is my business. Every move you make affects me and my family.
Wow. It must be nice to live in a world where everything revolves around you.
What's going on with you, then? He demands. You haven't been yourself.
I haven't been myself? Like you know me well enough to make that kind of statement. I scowl at him. Tell you what, I'll fill you in on all my secrets after you tell me where you sneak off to every night and why you come home with cuts and bruises. His eyes flash.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I cross my arms and try not to yawn again. Reed fixes his irritated gaze on the windshield, his big hands gripping the wheel tight. He's been driving me to work every morning at 5:30, then continuing on to school for his 6 a.m. football practice. Easton is on the team too, but he drives to practice on his own. I think it's because Reed wants alone time with me, so he can cross-examine me, the way he's done every morning since this annoying carpool began.
You're not going away, are you?
There's a note of defeat in his voice, along with the usual dose of anger.
Nope, I'm not going away.
He stops in front of the bakery and shoves the gear shift to park. What? I mutter, when those piercing blue eyes turn to me. His lips tighten for a moment.
The game tonight.
What about it? The clock on the dash says it's 5:28.
The sun isn't even up yet, but the French Twist's front window is lit up. Lucy's already inside, waiting for me.
My dad wants you to go.
The royal pain forms between my shoulder blades. Goody for him. Reed looks like he's trying not to strangle me.
You're coming to the game.
Pass. I don't like football. Besides, I have to work. I reach for the door handle, but he leans over the seat and grabs my arm. A rush of heat travels from his fingers, down my arm, and settles between my legs. I order my traitorous body to stand down and try not to breathe in the spicy, masculine scent that reaches my nostrils. Why does he have to smell so good?
I don't care what you like or don't like. I know you get off at 7. Kickoff is at 7:30. You're coming.
His voice is low, rippling with... It's not anger anymore, but thick with... I don't know with what. All I know is that he's too close for comfort, and my heart is beating dangerously fast. I'm not going to some stupid high school football game to cheer for you and your meathead friends, I snap, shrugging his hand off my arm. The loss of his warmth sends an instant shiver through me. Callum will just have to deal. I slide out of the SUV and slam the door, then hurry down the dark sidewalk toward the bakery. I barely make it to school before the first bell. I only have time for a quick stop in the bathroom to change into my Astor Park uniform, and then I sit through my morning classes and fight to stay awake. At lunch, I chug so much coffee that Val finally has to cut me off. But at least I feel alert now. I take my seat next to Easton's in chem class and greet him with a reluctant hello.
You were snoring in English class this morning, he says with a grin.
I was not. I was wide awake the whole time.
Was I, though? Now I'm not so sure.
Easton rolls his eyes.
Aw, sis, you work too hard. I'm worried about you.
I roll my eyes back. I know the royal brothers aren't happy about my job. Neither is Callum, who wouldn't quit frowning when I told him about it. He insisted that I should be concentrating on my studies and not splitting my focus between school and work, but I hadn't budged. After I told him working was important to me and that I needed more than school to occupy my time, he'd backed off. Or so I'd thought. It isn't until the bell rings for my last class of the day that I realize Callum has made another power play behind my back. A tall, lithe woman comes up to me as I'm leaving my math class. She moves with the grace of a ballerina, so when she introduces herself as the coach of the dance team, I'm not surprised.
Ella, Ms. Kelly says, her sharp eyes studying me. Your guardian tells me you've been dancing since you were a child. What kind of training have you had?
I shift in discomfort. Not much training at all, I lie.
I'm not sure why Mr. Royal told you otherwise.
I think she sees right through me, because she arches a brow.
Why don't you let me be the judge of that? You're trying out for the team after school today.
Alarm bells ring in my head. What? No way. I don't want to join the dance team. Dancing is just a silly hobby. And... Oh, crap, didn't Savannah mention that Jordan is the captain of the team? Now I really don't want to try out.
I work after school, I say curtly.
Ms. Kelly blinks.
Work?
She says the word as if it's a foreign concept to her. But I guess when it comes to having a part-time job, I'm in the minority here at Astor Park.
What time is that?
3:30.
She frowns. All right. Well, my session doesn't let out until 4.
She thinks it over.
You know what? My captain will handle it. Carrington knows what we're looking for. You can try out for her at 3, and that leaves you plenty of time to get to your job.
My panic triples. I'm going to be trying out for Jordan? Hell to the no. Miss Kelly notices my expression and frowns again.
Mr. Royal and I expect you to be there, Ella. Every student at Astor Park Prep Academy is encouraged to contribute something to this school. Extracurriculars are a healthy and productive way to occupy your time.
Damn Callum.
The fact that she used the same phrase I gave him, occupy my time, tells me that he's definitely behind this.
Come to the practice gym after your last class. You can wear your P.E. uniform. She pats me on the arm,
then walks off before I can protest. A groan rises in my throat, but I choke it down. Is there anything the Royals aren't capable of doing? I'm not interested in joining the dance team, but I know that if I don't show up to the tryout, Ms. Kelly will report back to Callum, and if he's pissed enough, he might actually force me to quit my job. Or worse, the school might decide I have nothing special to offer and Berenger will kick me out, which Callum definitely won't like. Truthfully, I wouldn't like it either. This school is light years ahead academically from the public schools I attended in the past. I can't concentrate at all during my last class. I'm filled with dread about the tryout, and when I make my way to the south lawn after the bell rings, I feel like an inmate walking the Green Mile. I should have asked Val how she got out of this sort of thing, because she can dance, and I don't see anyone forcing her to try out. The girls' locker room is empty when I walk in, but there's a rectangular box sitting on the long, gleaming bench between the rows of lockers. Ella is scrawled on the top, and there's a folded piece of paper taped next to my name. My stomach churns. With shaky hands, I snatch the note and unfold it. Sorry, sweetie, we don't allow dirty strippers on the team, but I'm sure the Excalibur Club in town would love to let you try out. In fact, I have so much faith in you that I even bought you an audition outfit. The club's located at the corner of Trash Street and Gutter Ave. Break a leg. Jordan. Her name is signed in a feminine scrawl, and the glee behind each letter is unmistakable. My hands tremble even harder as I open the box and shove the tissue paper aside. When I see what's inside, embarrassment floods my stomach. The box contains a teeny pair of red panties, 5-inch spiked stilettos, and a lacy red bra with black tassels. The lingerie is ugly and trashy, and not unlike what I wore at Miss Candy's back in Kirkwood. I wonder which royal told them about my stripping. Callum must have confided in his sons, so who talked? Reed? Easton? I'm betting on Reed. Another emotion eclipses my embarrassment. Rage. White, hot rage that surges through my blood and makes the tips of my fingers tingle. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of the judgment and the insults and the sneers. I'm sick of it all. I crumple Jordan's note in my fist and whip it across the room. Then I spin on my heel and march toward the exit. Halfway to the door, I halt. My gaze travels back to the skanky underwear on the bench. You know what? They think I'm trash. I'll show them trash. Maybe it's the anger or the frustration or the lump of sheer helplessness lodged in my throat, but I don't feel in control of my own body. My hands rip at my clothes as if on autopilot, and I'm so mad I can taste the fury. My mouth is even watering. God, I'm foaming at the mouth. I yank the scrap of lace up my hips, snap the bra into place, and march toward the door. Not the door that leads outside, but the one that will take me to the gym. I leave the stilettos on the bench. I'm going to need my balance. My bare feet slap the floor, each step I take fueled by anger and a sense of injustice. These people don't know me. They have no right to judge me. I throw open the door and enter the gym, head high, hands at my sides. Someone notices me and gasps. Holy fuck! A male voice echoes from the other end of the gym, where the partition separating the weights and exercise equipment from the court is pushed open. A clanging sound echoes through the gym, as if someone dropped a barbell. My step stutters. The entire football team is over there, lifting weights and working out. I sneak the briefest peek in their direction, and feel my cheeks heat up. Every pair of male eyes is glazed over. Every jaw is unhinged. Except one.
One jaw stays locked tight as Reed's blue eyes blaze at me. I tear my gaze off him and continue toward the group of